This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
On air, streaming, and on podcast.
This is Gay News Week.
News and current affairs from a bent perspective.
You're listening to
Gay News Week.
Gay News Week.
Gay News Week.
Gay News Week.
On Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome to Gay News Week on Joy 94.9. My name is Matt Thompson.
I'm Katie Larson.
And I'm Jeffrey Devine.
We're bringing you the latest in news and current affairs impacting the GLBTI community over the next hour on tonight's show.
First off, we'll be speaking to Ron Hughes, who's the editor of Blaze Magazine in Adelaide, about the AIDS Council closing down there in South Australia. Mm-hmm. We'll also be listening to an interview that was on Joy earlier in the week with Susan Close, the Labor MP, who introduced the bill for marriage equality that has not passed in South Australia. Also,
lots going on in South Australia. And we're going to be taking a story which is about the release of the Born Free and Equal strategy from the United Nations. And we're going to be speaking to Cecile Pooley, who I hope I've pronounced correctly, from the United Nations about that. Following which, we're going to then do the National Roundup and the International News Roundup with Andrew Potts, as always.
Throughout the show, we want to hear what you're thinking on the topics that we're discussing. Do you agree with us? Do you disagree? Or are you somewhere in between? Make sure you get in touch.
Share your thoughts.
SMS
0427
Joy 949
or tweet at Gay Newsweek Joy.
This is Gay Newsweek on Australia's only GLBTI radio station, Joy 94.9. Yes, it's Katie, Jeffrey and Matt with you this evening.
And big news for the LGBTI community in South Australia this week with the announcement of the closure of the AIDS Council in that state. Joining us to tell us a bit more about why this has come about and what the reaction has been is the editor of Blaze Magazine in Adelaide, Ron Hughes. Ron, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Now, can you first off give us a little bit of background about how this has actually happened? There's a bit of information about it being financial, but there's two schools of thought on this. So what's actually going on?
Well, the plain story is that the AIDS Council last year got into some financial problems. They ran into deficit. There have been claims of mismanagement of funds. So what happened earlier this year, there was an extraordinary general meeting where the previous board was basically overturned and a new board came in and a new interim CEO was appointed, and their job was to get the AIDS Council back on track and show that they could be financially sustainable. All the evidence shows that they have been able to do that. In the last 4 months, they actually halved their debt. And they were tracking well to be financially stable by the end of the financial year.
So, Ron, what went wrong there?
Well, there's claims that there was overspending by the previous board. Mm-hmm. There's even been suggestions of misappropriation of funds, which is currently being investigated. I don't know too much about that. Everybody's keeping their mouths closed, mm-hmm. as you can understand, if it's under investigation.
Completely.
Now, as I understand it, there have been two audits, forensic audits, that have gone on inside the organisation. So for those that aren't familiar, they're the sorts of things you do prior to businesses going into insolvency. And they've both recommended that the organisation is stable and ought to be able to continue, but the government's taken a different view.
Well, that's correct. There were two independent auditors, and they both said, you're going to be financially stable by the end of this financial year. The government should have confidence with you. But unfortunately, SA Health were unconvinced. I think they just lost confidence in the AIDS Council, basically. They didn't think that they could deliver programs. They suggested losing some staff. And the SA Health have said, well, if they lost their staff, they couldn't deliver the programs to their satisfaction. And they were also concerned that if they got into financial trouble once before, what's to say it wouldn't happen again? that little injection of confidence would have kept the AIDS Council going. But unfortunately, SA Health's dug their heels in and said, no, enough is enough.
So is there any way back for the council from here? And if not, or if it's going to be a lengthy period of time, what happens to delivery of these programs?
Well, that's a good question. There's no coming back really for the AIDS Council because they put themselves into voluntary administration to show that they could actually turn things around, and they were doing that. But they asked for a package, which was to fund some redundancies mm-hmm. and also fund the administrators, and SA Health refused to fund that. And so yesterday, the administrators went back to the AIDS Council, called everybody together at 4 o'clock and gave them their termination notices, and the doors are closed. So there is no more AIDS Council.
So the government has taken the view that they don't want to throw good money after bad, in their opinion. But the vital services, what's going on there? Are they continuing or are they stopping as of today?
They have promised that they will continue. They're saying that the funding will not change. The money just won't be thrown back into some big pot and applied elsewhere. Money meant for gay men's health will go to gay men's health. Money for the sex industry network will go to the sex industry network. Money for the needle exchange program will go to the needle exchange program. The only question right now is who's going to deliver those services. So they're frantically having meetings for the rest of the week to find other providers that will carry them on for the rest of this financial year.
All right. Hopefully we'll come back with a update to that to tell you who's going to be running these essential services in South Australia. So Ron Hughes from Blaze Magazine, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us tonight on Gay News Week.
My pleasure. We'll let you know more when we know more.
News, views, interviews and discussion, all from a GLBTI point of view.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Yes, it's Katie, Jeffrey and Matt with you this evening. Last Thursday, the South Australian Parliament debated a bill which would have seen same-sex couples marrying in the state. The bill was defeated on Voices and subsequently went down in the lower house. Host of Joy's nationally networked GLBTI News and Current Affairs Bulletin QNN and Gay News Week contributor Jacob Holman spoke to the South Australian Labor MP Susan Close, who presented the bill to the House. He started by asking if she was surprised that the bill didn't pass.
Joy.
Well, at the time I wasn't surprised because it had become clear that the Liberal Party had determined that it would not allow a conscience vote. And given that there are differing views across both parties and also we have some independents, I knew that I needed everyone to be exercising their conscience in order to get enough votes to get it through. And it is possible it wouldn't have succeeded in any case, but it simply couldn't succeed without the opposition, the Liberal Party, giving a conscience vote.
Many of the arguments raised by the Liberal members of the Parliament were that the bill would not pass constitutional muster, that it would actually go up for a High Court challenge, and they didn't seem to be in principle opposing same-sex marriage, but they just argued that it wouldn't pass constitutional muster. What do you make of that argument?
Well, that is the reason that they've given for not allowing a conscience vote. So there are people in the Liberal Party who are in favour of same-sex marriage and people who are against, and we heard from both sides yesterday. The argument that they've used for not allowing a conscience vote is that they are not convinced that it's something that the state can do. And you would have heard a lot of people who are in favour of same-sex marriage making that case as a reason for not being able to vote in favour of the bill. The advice that I've received, and we also held a seminar for MPs a couple of weeks ago in between when I first introduced the bill and when I asked for the vote, the best advice that constitutional experts can give is that it is absolutely constitutional for a state to legislate on marriage. There are things in the Constitution that are wholly the business of the Commonwealth, and there are things that are wholly the business of states, and then there are what's called concurrent areas of interest. So marriage is very clearly something that states have legislated on. In South Australia, we had a Marriage Act up until 1961, and just a few years before that, we amended it, so well after Federation. So it is something that the state is able to have legislation on. So there's no question in that sense of its constitutionality. However, it is absolutely also true, and we all have to be honest about this, that it will in all likelihood be the subject of a High Court challenge, and it could lose. And the reason it could lose is that the High Court could determine that that the legislation is inconsistent with the Commonwealth legislation. And there are respectable arguments on both sides. There are arguments that the Commonwealth, in defining marriage as simply being between a man and a woman, have only defined what a Commonwealth marriage is, and that therefore there's room for states to say, well, we have something different, which is called same-sex marriage in South Australia. And there are people who think that we would succeed at the High Court on that, and there are people who think that we wouldn't. The real challenge is that if no state does it, we will never know. And it seemed to me that it was appropriate to give South Australia the opportunity of being that first state that tested that legislation, tested that constitutionality. Now, unfortunately, the Liberal Party decided to prejudge that, to say, well, we're not on the High Court, but we're going to make the decision anyway that we don't think it's constitutional, and therefore we won't support it. And I think that's a real pity. I suspect another state will do it. Mm-hmm. I think it will happen.
The opposition leader said, he had an interesting statement. He said that it would be cruel to gay couples if a bill was passed by the South Australian Parliament and then was ultimately overturned by the High Court. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't, and there's two reasons I don't. The most simple reason is that I believe I know of people who would be happy to get married under those circumstances and allow themselves to be tested. But his larger point that, look, we shouldn't really let people get into a situation and then have the threat of a challenge hanging over them is not unreasonable. And therefore, the second reason I disagree with him is that it would I had opened the up a discussion with the opposition to say we could stagger the implementation of this bill so that we bring in some clauses prior to bringing in the full marriage celebration, which would mean that the High Court challenge could occur without anyone being married. So I had already raised that as an option in order to avoid that very circumstance. But that said, as I say, I reckon there are a number of couples who wouldn't mind going through that as part of their symbolic the steps towards progress, that they would feel that that was something that they wanted to do. But we could do it without that occurring.
Was that included in the bill, that clause that would stagger the introduction of same-sex marriage, or was it not?
No, it wasn't, and you wouldn't necessarily have to do it in the bill. You could do it as the way in which the government chooses to then gazette it. But I had floated that I would be prepared to look at an amendment along those lines. But it became apparent that it was not likely to get into that second reading stage, where you do those amendments. That there was a view that had been formed within the Liberal Party that they did not regard it as constitutional.
Okay, this issue was quite interesting because it sort of united the Liberal opposition with a lot of gay activists. Deputy Opposition Leader Vicky Chapman suggested that introducing the bill on Thursday was a tactic of the government to present the bill in the full knowledge that it would fail. Rodney Croom from Australian Marriage Equality also called on South Australian Labor to work across the aisle. Do you think that the bill was given enough chance of success?
The specific issue that Rodney was raising, and I have a lot of respect for AME, and you know it's legitimate for them to engage in this debate. The specific issue that he was raising, that he was concerned about, is that New South Wales, in their parliament, is about to come out with a report in the next few days on an investigation into the constitutionality of this kind of legislation. And what I was hearing, although no one formally approached me and said, please defer it because we may change our minds, but what I was hearing was, look, if you wait until after that happens, then it's possible that the Liberal Party will not enforce a conscience vote. But countervailing that was a couple of things. First of all, we're about to go, so yesterday was our last day of sitting for 6 weeks. We then only have six more weeks of sitting in Parliament. I have seen delaying tactics occur, particularly on conscience issues, where a bill is introduced and then there's, oh, we just need to think this through and we need a bit of time on that, and then the year's gone. And what I didn't want was for this piece of legislation to simply sit on the notice paper and fall off. We've got an election early next year, so it would be Parliament's prorogued, which means all the legislation's gone. And I didn't want that to happen to this. I thought it was historically significant that we were actually introducing this and debating it, and I wanted a vote on it. I also don't buy, and it's a matter of judgment, but I don't buy that an interstate report ought to or will in fact make a difference to the Liberal Party position.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they were being dishonest about that?
No, because no one's come and asked me. So I think it's a question of judgment. So the Liberal Party didn't say that they would change their mind to me. They never made that claim. However, I think that there was a general view that that might be possible, and that's why there was the request to delay. But here's the interesting thing. We've gone through, we've voted on it, people have made the decisions that they've made. The bill is identical to one that had been previously introduced by the Greens in the upper house and amended significantly by one of our ministers, one of the Labor ministers. That bill remains in the upper house. So should it be that, in fact, this report from New South Wales offers an alternative view that is convincing to the Liberal Party, then they will have the opportunity to remove the conscience vote for that bill. So all is not lost. What I was concerned about is this... just wait, put it off, let other things happen first, and then we don't do anything about it. And I must say, the discussions that I heard, the speeches yesterday from the Liberal Party that related to the Constitution seemed to me to set an impossible bar for that New South Wales report. I can't conceive that that report could rule out a High Court challenge or could say that in the event of a High Court challenge, it would unambiguously be unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. Well, it seemed to me that that was the tenor of what they were saying in Parliament, that it would need to do for them to reconsider.
Yeah. Well, in fact, the New South Wales Parliamentary Inquiry was released probably in the last hour or so from the time we're recording this, and they did, in fact, concede that a state-based same-sex marriage bill would be subject to a High Court challenge. But they said that a law passed by a state parliament would be constitutional. Do you think that strengthens...
That's exactly the advice that I've had, that I gave in the second reading speech, that was given in the seminar. That's the only position they could come up with, because it's the truth. Yep. It is constitutional to have a piece of legislation relating to marriage. It is unclear whether the High Court would regard it as inconsistent. And I, you know, we will see if the state Liberal Party, having heard it from the mouths of New South Wales people rather than from South Australian people, reconsider, then good on them. But we'll see.
On a personal level, why is it so important and what motivated you to pursue reform to marriage in South Australia?
Well, there's a couple of arguments. So I'm a Labor Member of Parliament, and part of why I'm Labor is because I believe in people having rights. I'm against discrimination and I'm in favour of pushing power down to everybody. I believe in democracy. I believe in people being equal before the law. These are really fundamental values for me, and they're Labor values, and so I'm proud of that. There is also a personal side, so I believe I would feel that way regardless. But in addition to that, my young brother, 10 years younger than I am, is a gay man. I watched him come out in year 11, which is a very courageous thing to do. He's now 35, so that was a while ago. And so on that personal front, it makes it very simple for me. I have the right to marry, he doesn't. So that takes away any of the lack of having a personal sense of why this is an important issue. It becomes very clear to me that my brother and I are very similar in personality, and we each have partners. I'm allowed to get married, he isn't. It doesn't seem right.
Dr. Susan Close, Labor Member for Port Adelaide in the South Australian Parliament, thank you very much for joining us on Joy 94.9.
You're welcome.
That's Jacob Holman from QNN with that interview with Susan Close.
Now, I think that was an interesting interview, and I want to know whether the lack of conscience vote for the Liberals in South Australia was something they decided to do themselves, or whether it was any level of federal influence.
Oh, it would be
Tony Abbott not wanting this on the federal election agenda coming up.
I think that would put an enormous amount of pressure on Tony Abbott if the South Australian Liberals did allow a conscience vote. I would imagine that would be almost certainly pressure from above. Or am I just really cynical?
I think you're cynical, and I think it's probably true.
I think that's generally the best way to be in politics, isn't it?
I think so. I think my other question out of that is, why was there no division or vote called in the House? Because it doesn't take much when you're doing these sort of things to actually push it to a vote so that individual members of the House get their names written down as being for or against something. Whereas when they do it on The Voices, there is no one's name actually being documented. Okay. So it's a bit of a weasel way out.
It's interesting that a couple of issues I thought came out of that was particularly around if there's state same-sex marriage, then how does that affect the couples if the decision is then overturned by the High Court, so that you have the opportunity to get married and then all of a sudden you're not married anymore, which we saw a lot of that happening in California. So I think that that's one of those things that it was suggested that potentially it was cruel. I don't think it's cruel because I think, you know, how is it any worse than not being allowed to get married at all, number one. And number two, I think as long as people go into it understanding that this isn't part of political play.
And being part of a political play means that you go into being one of the first couples getting married knowing that your case may well be the one that makes it to the High Court and that you're going to have to stand there and have people discuss your marriage and your stuff.
That's right. Mm. It's interesting, you know, obviously we've got New South Wales talking about doing their own bill and also the ACT as well. What actually happens in terms of if all of a sudden we've got different states trying to get same-sex marriage?
Yeah, but I think that's actually the point, though, is that we have that you were talking about how South Australia, Tony Abbott probably doesn't want South Australia, that he doesn't want that on his desk. He's already got that going on in New South Wales. Barry O'Farrell saying he's ready to go it alone and have New South Wales be the only state that legislate it. So really, I don't think that would be one issue that why it should be declined like that. Mind you, yeah.
Who knows? I mean, it's interesting. I think it could get a bit messy if all of a sudden the states have got different ideas around what same-sex marriage is. For example, the New South Wales bill excludes transgender and intersex couples.
Which is a discussion we were actually having this afternoon, and I didn't actually quite understand it. Jacob Holman was actually in the studios with us this evening, and he actually helped explain a few things where basically, so if they legalise same-sex marriage in one state, say New South Wales, and then there was a transgendered couple that's with opposite sex, an opposite sex couple, they would be excluded from that same-sex legislation at a state level.
And I think this is the difficulty with having states trying to get bills passed and making them as tight as possible to get them through, as opposed to a full equality marriage bill through the federal government.
And the other side of that is, should we take what we can get when we can get it and
completely.
Be very pragmatic about
it?
And that's a way forward, is maybe we have to do it messily.
If this was going to be, can we take what we can get when we get it, we should have done civil unions 5 years ago. Do you know what I mean? This has always been about getting full equality, no shortcuts, no exclusions.
And everyone, that strategy hasn't worked yet.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
It hasn't worked, but it's come a long way. And do you we've seen in New Zealand and the UK and with the civil unions, they then push for full equality. I mean, maybe it's take one step forward in a different way. I don't know.
Our social media editor, Shannon, has asked on Twitter at Gay Newsweek, Joy, does one state need to legalise marriage equality before the rest will? Daniel has sent us a tweet and he says a resounding yes, basically. So that's what Daniel's saying. He says, we need to go one state at a time until basically the whole country comes on board. Agree, disagree?
I think it's a way forward. I think it's messy, but it's better than what we've not got already.
It's one strategy, but I'm not big on it. If we start excluding people just to get something through, that seems like just the same old problem playing out again.
Very interesting. On the feedback as well, 0427 Joy 949, Tony has sent us a message saying, classic Labor governments showing complete disrespect for the GLBTI community. Obviously talking about the South Australian AIDS Council shutting down at the very start of the show.
News, views, interviews and discussion, all from a GLBTI point of view.
Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
What exists in every corner of the world?
Embraced and celebrated in some countries,
but is illegal in 76.
What is hidden for fear of public shame, imprisonment,
torture, or in seven countries even
the death penalty?
What tears families apart?
What makes people confront brutal violence on a daily basis?
What simple trait
gets people treated as second-class citizens
everywhere they go?
What gets children kicked out of homes, students bullied and expelled from schools,
and workers fired from jobs without warning?
What has existed in every country throughout history,
but some people still consider
abnormal?
Being gay.
Being lesbian.
Bisexual.
Transgender.
All over the world, millions of people face violence and discrimination just for being who they are.
Every nation is obligated by international human rights law to protect all lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people from torture, discrimination and violence.
The United Nations has one simple message to the millions of LGBT people around the world.
You are not alone. You are not alone. LGBT rights are human rights.
LGBT rights are human rights. Together, we will build a world.
We will build a world that is free and equal.
And that was the online video clip from the Born Free and Equal campaign, which is an initiative of the United Nations Human Rights Office. So to discuss this particular new campaign, we have on the line Cecile Pooley. I hope I've pronounced that right. Are you there, Cecile?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you doing?
Good. And Cecile is from the media office at the United Nations in Geneva.
First off, where did the inspiration for this campaign come from? What was actually driving the announcement of this last week?
Well, first we issued a report in December 2011, which was the first ever official UN report on violence and discrimination against LGBT people. And we thought the next step is really to raise more awareness regarding all the discrimination and the violence that LGBT people face throughout the world. And so that's why we decided to launch this unprecedented global campaign.
It's an amazing announcement and an important step in taking a global focus on GLBTI rights. But how do you go about influencing the countries where LGBTI people are the most oppressed, e.g. some of the scenes we're seeing out of Russia at the moment, some of the stories we hear out of some of the African nations? How do you go about getting that message through there?
Well, of course, there's a lot to be done. There is, of course, a need to engage into a conversation to change people's minds, people's hearts, obviously, so they get to understand better the lives LGBT people live through the eyes of LGBT people, so they have a better understanding of what they face. And, of course, there is also a need for legal reforms in over 76 countries in the world. Consensual same-sex relationships are still being criminalised, so there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
We here on Gay Newsweek, as a gay and lesbian broadcaster, cover a lot of the very bad stories that occur around the world in the GLBTI international community on a regular basis. How much do you think a campaign like this will influence those countries that are so far behind the rest of the world to catch up?
Well, we really do hope that they will start engaging people, I mean everyday people, into a conversation so they start to understand the need for more equality for LGBT people. After all, LGBT people are just people. They have basic rights, and these human rights really are universal. Everyone, whoever they are, wherever they live, are entitled to those same rights, and that includes lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex people. No one should be attacked and discriminated against just because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. So we're hoping, we know this conversation is not necessarily easy in some parts of the world, and changing attitudes is never easy. That takes time, but we really need to engage this conversation.
And certainly it appears that a number of the countries are not complying with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and a number of other instruments that have been put out and signed off on in the United Nations. And so that level of international pressure must at least start an impetus for change in some of these places.
Absolutely. We've been extremely vocal on this issue. As I mentioned, not only same-sex relationships are being criminalized in 76 countries in the world, but at least five countries, same-sex relationships are punishable by death. So there is really quick action that is needed and more lobbying. But I think it's also happened not only at the diplomatic level, but at the level of the public at large. So that's why we need really this campaign to engage a maximum of people. And we really hope our initiative as well online will have echo and will have a lot of impact.
So Cecile, how will you go about having that impact, both at a legal level internationally, but also in terms of public education?
Yeah, absolutely. What we're trying to do is prepare an online campaign on social media and engage people at the national level to engage themselves into their own dynamic and their own conversation. We will be promoting, we have a video that has already been released, which is called The Riddle, but there are also a number of series of films interviewing family members of LGBT people around the world so they can tell their story with their own words and explain what their situation is like, and so we can understand their life, but as well through their own wording, but as well through the eyes of their mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, you know, their families, who are as well impacted by the discrimination that is faced by LGBT people.
And certainly in terms of campaigning, we know here that using our straight allies as a force for change is a really important way forward. Now, The Riddle is the audio piece that we played for you at the beginning of this segment, which is the audio piece I referred to, and I actually noticed at least one of the other pieces that are up online. So we're going to put that up on our feed and circulate that through the Joy networks here in the station. So what can our people that are listening to this, either on the broadcast, web stream or podcast, do to interact with this initiative?
Well, I think they can help the video being seen by as many people as possible, and as well try to discuss around them with people they know and engage into that very important conversation. Why do LGBT people deserve equality, and what can they do at their own level to change preconception, misconceptions about LGBT people worldwide, but as well at a very national and local level?
All right. Thank you very much for taking the time, Cecile Pooley, from the Human Rights Office of the United Nations in Geneva, for chatting with us about this fantastic initiative that certainly we here at Gay News Week support.
News, views, interviews and discussion, all from a GLBTI point of view.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Yes, it's Katie, Jeffrey and Matt this evening. Time to take a look at some of the stories making news around the country in the National Affairs Roundup.
And the first one we're going to go with is gender discrimination to be removed from Medicare. Health Minister Tanya Plibersek, who is a friend of this program, has announced gender discrimination will be removed from Medicare forms and the likes. And so people will not have to declare their sex or gender necessarily to Medicare and to access health services in that are funded by Medicare. So this is a great step in a good direction for our people in the trans and intersex communities, our brothers and sisters there.
Yeah, certainly. Of course, this story was covered on The Line last Thursday with Dean Beck. He actually spoke to Tanya Plibersek in the studio.
And it covers about 6,000 services, and 43 of them will need to be changed to cover this. So this is a really good step.
That is really dramatic indeed. Of course, it wouldn't be Gay News Week if we didn't have a rainbow story.
I know, and we've been a bit short on rainbow stories recently. So what a relief. It's back, and the Lord Mayor of Sydney, Clover Moore, has is basically talking about she wants to get a permanent symbol at Taylor Square. Now, I'm not sure if it's a permanent rainbow, though, on the street. We're still not talking about a rainbow crossing. They're just trying to... They've got a couple of ideas they've bandied about. A rainbow fountain that released bubbles on the hour.
I like that one.
Could we do rainbow bubbles?
I think there would have to be rainbow bubbles, or a giant flag in Taylor Square that lit up at night to provide a spot for taking photos.
I like the bubbles better.
Yeah, or a multicolour voltaic floor that creates a rainbow as you walk across it. I'm down with that idea.
That's a good one too. So we should have rainbow bubbles and the rainbow floor.
I think just create Rainbow Central.
I'm getting the idea of Saturday Night Fever a little bit. Anyone else? Anyone else? The rainbow floor thing? No? You know, the dancing thing. Oh.
It's interesting that you would give that reference.
Shut
it's
up.
It's like 20 years before you were born. Or
anyway, mind you, staying with rainbows, Vancouver. I know it's not a national story, but I found this one. Vancouver, they've got a rainbow crossing unveiled. It's amazing.
There's three rainbows going across the street. I don't know why. We're at a rainbow bubble system we're talking about here. It's
a rainbow bubble under street arrangement.
Where do these discussions come from? And then lastly, in the National Affairs Roundup, the Australian Bureau of Statistics has found that same-sex couples have more money, more qualifications and more children.
And that we're apparently happier. Did I read somewhere that we're happier as a result?
And more equal as well in terms of distribution of household chores.
I think that's probably true.
Certainly
we distribute them. So I think what this tells
us
is that once you get a little bit on in years and you're actually living as a stable couple in a relationship, you're actually happier than our heterosexual counterparts.
Mm. Assuming that, of course, that you're happier because, and in a relationship, you might be single and happy.
And it also...
Just saying.
And given that a quarter of the respondents to this study actually lived within the confines of Sydney, I think the story might be different because I don't know who would... I think once you get out of the big cities, I don't know how you're going to respond to the survey techniques or
course,
the census.
And yeah, that's right. People who are willing to come out
to declare.
Same-sex.
And just lastly on that story, some of the stats, 27 of the nation's same-sex couples are living in the electorate of Sydney.
27% probably, that's rather than 27.
Did I say 27%? Thank you, Jeff. Jeffrey, then Melbourne, and then, interesting, thirdly, Wentworth in New South Wales. That is the electorate that Malcolm Turnbull controls. Just so you know, there you go. That's
it. That featured heavily in Prisoner, I think.
Oh, well. And now is the new show on Foxtel.
All right, moving on. Okay, that's the National Affairs Roundup. Time to take a look at some of the stories making news around the globe. We're joined, as always, by Andrew Potts from Gaystar News. Good evening, Andrew.
Hey, guys.
Andrew, first off tonight, good news from the Pope, which we've been waiting a long time to say.
But
at World Youth Day in Brazil, he said he could not judge people for their sexual orientation. And it's had a particularly strong response from LGBT people in the Philippines.
That's right. So following Pope Francis's trip to Brazil for World Youth Day, he did an interview in Rome where he was asked a number of questions about the issue of homosexuality and also gay clergy. And what he said was that if someone is gay and he searches for the Lord and has goodwill, who am I to judge? So that's a very different sort of statement than what we've heard from the last two popes. Mm. And the Progressive Organization of Gays in the Philippines, they've praised what they call a somewhat positive words by the Pope. What they've said is the Pope's declaration is a non-judgmental position about integrating gays into society and is a marked improvement over his predecessor's harsh and bitchy remarks. Each time the media interviewed the ex-Pope about homosexuality, that was Clyde Pumahick of that association spokesman.
It's a great small first step in a good direction, and I think that's about as positive as I can be about it.
Yeah.
Tell us what's going on in Vietnam.
Okay, so we've now seen a second Vietnamese government ministry backing same-sex marriage in the Southeast Asian nation.
Wow.
So the first ministry to do that was the health ministry, and they were quite emphatic that the government should get on and pass it quickly. This time it's the justice ministry. That's important because it's the justice ministry that's actually running the government inquiry into same-sex marriage there. Now, what they're suggesting is that they won't go straight ahead with same-sex marriage. They're going to try and sort of prepare the country for the change. So what they're planning to do is first amend the country's law on family and marriage. Currently, men are allowed to marry if they're over 20 and women are allowed to marry if they're over 18. They're going to make that equal. Mm-hmm. And what they're also going to do is start formally recognising same-sex couples' property rights as a way of nudging society forward to eventually, hopefully in the next few years, legalising same-sex marriage.
Mm, right. Fairly positive stories
coming.
Yeah,
very positive. And across the Tasman, not such positive news. An anti-gay speech, well, it's kind of positive, has prompted a mass walkout in New Zealand Youth Parliament. Tell us a bit more about this one, Andrew.
That's right. So in each term of Parliament in New Zealand, there's a legally mandated youth parliament is held where a child is between the age of 18 and 16 is chosen to represent every electorate in New Zealand. Mm. So during this time, Kura Waller, she was the youth MP, one of the youth MPs for the New Zealand Maori Party, and she chose the 3-month anniversary of New Zealand voting to approve same-sex marriage to rail against what she called madness, saying that gay people were outside the circle of life in reference to the Lion King. That prompted a large walkout of MPs, with about one third of the youth MPs in the House of Representatives walking out, and they were led by youth MPs from the Labor, Green, and National parties. So that was a fairly strong statement there from all of the major parties in New Zealand about those sorts of sentiments.
Mm. Now, UFC fighting isn't one of my strong points. Katie, is it yours?
No.
But you like this story?
Well, I think this story is a little bit entertaining.
Sure.
So this is there's Camouche as someone who has won the first Ultimate Fighting Championship bout between two same-sex attracted women. I think the most interesting thing about this is only the first bout between two same-sex attracted women in Ultimate Fighting.
World first, wow.
Mm. Andrew, can you tell us a little more about this one?
Yeah, sure. I do watch the Ultimate Fighting, so
do you?
I can give you a bit of background. So Liz Camouche, she's the first openly gay UFC fighter. She's won quite a few matches, but this is the first time in the UFC that two same-sex attracted players, openly gay players, have fought against each other, and Camouche has come out on top. She knocked out her Brazilian opponent, Jessica Andrade, with a second-round knockout.
Oh, wow. Feisty.
It sounds like a pretty intense sport here, Andrew. I just want to just read out a little bit of the information about the game, the round, the fight, the bout, whatever you call it.
So things didn't look that good for Camush in round one, and she spent most of it trying to break out of guillotine chokehold.
A guillotine chokehold.
But unfortunately, Andrade was unable to choke Camush out, so the next round they got back up to their feet. And Camush pummeled Andrade before attempting two submissions and then locking in a knockout blow from a mounted position. The match was scored 9-3.
Well, that's excellent. On a slightly more, I don't know if it's a more serious note, but is ultimate fighting a particularly homophobic environment, or why is this particular?
Actually, the UFC president, Dana White, he's said that he'd love to see greater LGBT participation in the sport. And the sport actually fined a lightweight fighter $20,000 and suspended him for 90 days last year.
That's right, we did talk about that.
Homophobic tweet, yeah.
So I reckon that's a really interesting one. But let's and we're going to do the next bit without Matty because he's on the floor with tears rolling down his face on that. Talk to us about Gay Mario Brothers, which is a game from way back.
Another hard hitting story
that we'd like to cover. Go.
Okay, so what's happened is a story in the Spanish language equivalent of The Onion, claiming that the Super Mario Brothers are actually a gay couple, has spread virally online with Spanish language media across South America reporting it as a serious news story.
Excellent.
So what they said was they had a July 16 report where they said that an investigation had found that children under 10 were just assuming that Luigi and Mario were a gay couple.
Ernie and Bert.
And then on July 19, they followed up with a false story with an interview with the supposed inventor of the Super Mario Brothers. And what he told, he was quoted as saying in CNCL Seminal, that was the website, he was quoted as saying, that was the original intention of the game. It was a game charged with the signs of gay culture, and Luigi and Mario were a gay couple trying to brave a society that rejects them.
Andrew, is there any word on whether the princess is a lesbian?
I don't know, but according to the article, the flagpoles at the end of each level of Super Mario Brothers are actually phallic symbols. and the Goomba enemies in the game were supposed to represent testicles.
And the turtles? Do we know anything about the turtles?
I don't know anything on the status of the turtles. But
just confirming, no response on turtles.
The story was picked up from a far afield of Mexico to Argentina. So I think that says something about the standards of maybe Spanish language tabloid and checking.
Well, that's it. And the story that these are the stories that must be told.
It's always the hard-hitting stories that we take away from the International Affairs Roundup with you, Andrew Potts. Thank you so much for bringing us all the latest from Gaystar News.
Anytime.
News, views, interviews and discussion, all from a GLBTI point of view.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Yes, it's been Katie, Jeffrey and Matt with you this evening. Before we get out of here, just a few more messages coming through on 0427 Joy 949. One says, don't settle for less and don't compromise. Your life and identity is worth much more. Obviously talking about
full
marriage,
equality.
Full equality and all of that stuff.
Might have been Mario Brothers.
Might have been.
And another person about our lovely, perhaps...
Bubble fountain
in Taylor Square. I'd love a fountain with lights. It'd be so pretty in Kiss photos. Let it be. I'm thinking something with marble and Greek. Ooh, I like that. I like the sound
it's
of that.
It's elaborate. I think put it forward. Put
and
it forward
we could
to the
do
city.
The women's fighting on top of the thing underneath the bubbles.
Look, it's a Labor government. They're big with spending. Anyway, that's all for Gay News Week tonight. Before we get out of here, we need to say a big thank you to everyone who joined in the conversation this evening. We thank you so much for your input. And, of course, our technical producer, Matt Nock, for pushing the buttons.
And then also we'd like to thank Eric for taking calls on the front desk.
Thanks, Eric.
Shannon Gillies for all the social media activity that you will see today and through the week. Throughout the week, follow us on Twitter at Gay News Week Joy.
And of course on Facebook at facebook.com/GayNewsWeekJoy949. And of course we need to say actually thank you to Gordon, who's on the front desk, not Eric. He was on before.
Oh,
nice try.
Didn't see the changeover. You didn't? No. Sorry about that, Gordon.
And we're available all across the networks and social medias and stuff, including a podcast. And we have an encore presentation Monday nights at midnight.
For more information, you can go to joy.org.au/GayNewsWeek. Until next week, we are...
Katie Larson.
Jeffrey Devine.
My name is Matt Thompson. This has been the shambles that is always Gay News Week on the gayest station in the nation.
from Australia's
biggest GLBTI
broadcast media organisation.
Gay Newsweek
on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.